हरिः ॐ
सहनावावतु सहनोभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay. So page 59, Sutra 1329. Ata eva cha nityam tvam, or nityatvam. Ata eva, therefore, cha and nityatvam, eternity. Therefore the Vedas are eternal. Sutra Prakashika. The eternity of the Vedas is proved by the fact that the Creator, Brahma, creates the world by reciting the Vedic words described in the eternal forms and by remembering the previous creation. Sri Govindavasya. The eternity of the Vedas is proved since the words indicate eternal models and remind Brahma how to create these forms. Names like Kataka, referring to the speaker Kata, should be understood to indicate the name not of a sage who created the mantras, but a person who uttered the verses which are eternal. Footnote 34. In other words, Kataka Muni and the other sages should be understood to be merely the speakers and not the authors of the Vedas. Right? Because each verse is given... Or verse, a group of verses that are connected to a particular sage. Because by chanting those mantras, they became perfect. Right? That's what their meditation was. They meditated on that mantra, or that group of mantras. And by that, they perfected their life. But it meant that they chanted them and they became perfect. Not that they are the authors of that mantras. Right? Okay, Bhagavatam verse reference. The Vedic sound is the potency of the Supreme Lord, thus it is eternal. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.7.25. O Lord, you are the original source of Vedic literature, Shabda Yonihi. You are the original cause of material creation, the life force, the senses, the five elements, the three modes, and the Mahat Tattva. You are eternal time, determination, and the two religious systems called truth, Satya, and truthfulness, Rita. You are the shelter of the syllable Om, which consists of three letters, A, U, and M. And so basically pointing out that everything's coming from sound, he is that person. So he's the source of all the Vedic literature and everything else. Not just he's the source of the literature, and then the literature, you know, is just creating everything. He's actually the source of everything. Everything that's created may be based on the Veda, but it's still he is who is the creator of it. Yeah. Okay, truth, satya, means, you know, just knowledge and everything, and rita means then that dependency on the Lord. Right? Just taking just what is... Not making an endeavor beyond for, you know, really fulfilling the senses. Right? Because rita... As a occupation means you're just collecting what no one else wants. Does that make sense? Like that. So that means you're not trying. It's knowledge about the Lord and not being absorbed in the material status. Does that make sense? And then he is A, U, and M. So A is Krishna. U is his internal potency. M is the living entities. Right, so that's why it's considered complete. That's why it's the Mahavakya. Because then the Chandra and the Bindu then also include his pastimes and the Dham. Right? So it's Om is complete in itself. It's the impersonal representation of the Lord and his name, form, quality, pastimes, associates, Dham, everything. 8:27, 8:26. O Father of all planets, learned scholars know that fire is your mouth, the surface of the globe is your lotus feet, eternal time is your movement, all the directions are your ears, and Varuna, master of the waters, is your tongue. Yes. So it's just, he's represented in all these different aspects, because they're non-different from him, they're his potencies. So as that's all you can understand, that's the only way you can relate to the Lord, you know, in having a form or anything, then that would be considered a lower understanding, right? A beginning understanding, like the impersonalists. But for the devotees, then they see him in everything, so everything's working because of him. So there's nothing that, there's no situation in which they cannot be reminded of the Lord. That's the whole idea. So sometimes it's saying, oh, but all these things get in the way. That's only in the beginning. After some time, no, everything just reminds you of Krishna. So there's a 8:729. O Lord, the five important Vedic mantras are represented by your five faces, from which the 38 most celebrated Vedic mantras have been generated. Footnote 35. Srila Prabhupada explains. The five mantras mentioned in this connection are as follows. Purusha, Aghora, Sadyojata, Vamadeva, and Ishana. These five mantras are within the category of 38 special Vedic mantras chanted by Lord Shiva, who is therefore celebrated as Shiva or Mahadev. Srimad Bhagavata 8:729, purport. Yeah, so at any function that you're doing, then generally always the Purusha and the Vamadeva have to be chanted. Right? Purusha then is worship of Krishna as Vishnu, and Vamadeva then is Vamana, and by his grace then any imperfections in the chanting or the ritual then is cleared. Okay. Your Lord... Oh, sorry?
Lord, these verses, they're referring to Lord Shiva.
No, they're just mentioned, they're chanted by, they're not referring to.
Chanted by?
These five mantras are within the category of 38 special Vedic mantras chanted by Lord Shiva.
Yeah. In general, the three verses, 25, 26, 25. The Bhagavatam verses, they refer to Shivji.
Your Lordship being celebrated as Lord Shiva is self-illuminated. You are directly situated as the Supreme Truth known as Paramatma. So Paramatma is Lord Shiva? Means in the verses before it mentioned about how he's the qualitative incarnations. So Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So the point is it's Krishna that's coming in these forms. Yes. Okay. You understand? So it's just showing how Krishna is everything. That's the whole point of these verses. And that this is all coming from sound. So from sound everything is generated. But that sound is coming from Krishna. Okay? Okay. 1:30. Samana nama rupa tvach chavrityav apya virodho darshanat smites cha. Smarana, same. Nama, because of the names. Rupa tvach, and forms. Cha, also. Avrityav, in the repetition. Api, also. Avirodha, not a contradiction. Darshanat, because of the shruti smritech. No, because of the Shruti. Right? Okay, Smritech is the next thing, right? Smritech, because of the Smriti. Cha, indeed. because of the Shruti Smriti, which is because of the Smriti. There is no contradiction because after Pralaya, things are created with the same names and forms. This is confirmed in Shruti and Smriti. Sutra Prakashika. Next, the Karma Mimamsa followers of Jaimini Rishi dispute the eternity of the Vedas by reference to the cause of devastation. They argue that since the Vedas are created anew with each life of Brahma, they, along with the forms of the devatas, are temporary. This Vyasa response is incorrect. After Pralaya, the Vedas and the eternal archetypal forms rest within the Lord, becoming one with Him. They never cease to exist. They are merely manifest or unmanifest. Because Krishna is eternal, so everything's eternal. There's nothing, it's a matter of manifestation whether it's eternal or temporary. Right? But the point is when it's manifest so that there's interactions, then we'll say that that's manifest. When it's dormant, where there's no interaction, we'll say that that's unmanifest. Unless we're talking about the Lord's pastime. There then, manifest means we can see it. Unmanifest means it's going on, but we can't see it. Does that make sense? Sri Govinda Bhashya, Purva Paksha, let that be. Like that. We lost out on that one, so just let that be. We won't discuss that one anymore. It's too embarrassing. So, after the daily destruction, Brahma creates the forms of devatas by remembering the forms contained in the words of the Veda. At the time of final devastation, however, everything other than Prakriti, including the Vedas, is destroyed. How can another creation take place, and how can the Vedas be eternal? So then they're just thinking it's just one creation, and what's the point? Then does that mean at the very last, you know, point just before, then they just live it up or something, because it's their piety is not going to go through to the next one? You know. Okay. Shamshaya.
Oh, that's
right. Oh, I was going to say, or the previous one is Shamshaya, and this is Purva Paksha. Okay. So that one's the Purva Paksha, this Siddhanta, or that's the Shamshaya, and this, okay.
Yeah. It's instead of Shamshaya, it's
Siddhanta. Siddhanta, okay.
Yeah, it's my mistake.
Okay. That's a good one. Good one to adjust. Samana, or you're doing like Lord Chaitanya, is that you present the thing, defeat it, and then defeat it again, and then go back and defeat that one. Okay. No? Okay. Samana nama rupach chavritav apyavirodho darshanat smritesh cha. There's no contradiction because after Pralaya, things are created with the same names and forms. This is confirmed in Shruti and Smriti. The word cha is used to destroy doubt. Right? But means doubt. But cha is
indeed. Indeed.
Indeed. Okay. At the time of a new creation, after the Pralaya, there is no contradiction about the words of the Vedas being eternal, meaning two is but, right?
Yeah,
so we say whenever you open with two, it means it's a doubt. You know, and then when here, then cha is used to destroy doubt. At the time of a new creation after the Pralaya, there is no contradiction about the words of the Vedas being eternal. Why? Because things exist in the new creation with the same names and forms. Samana nama rupatvat. At the time of the great destruction, the Vedas and the various forms expressed in their words, which are eternal objects, reside within the Lord endowed with Shaktis, having become one with Him. When the Lord desires to create the universes, these forms again appear. The creation will be manifested by the Lord and the four-headed Brahma while reflecting on the various forms described in the Vedas. Just as a potter considers the forms of previous pots through the word pot and then produces similar pots, So the later creation is similar to the previous creation. The creation takes place after the great destruction, just as it does after the destruction following the day of Brahma. Right, so the creation is the same whether it's the beginning of the day of Brahma or whether it is after the, you know, the Brahma's lifetime and the next Brahma then creates. There's no difference. It's always the same. That's the thing, is that if you ever had any idea of any attachment to the variety of the material world, then as Lord Brahma, hopefully you give it up, because, you know, you do this creation 500,000 times in your lifetime. So it kind of gets old, really.
Yeah, that's it.
There's something wrong with the mattress. Okay. How is this known? It is known from the Shrutis, Darshanat, and Smritis, Smritehe. Some Shrutis are as follows. Atmatva idam eka evagra asin na nanyat. Kim chanam ishat cha, no, sa, ikshata lokan nu sirija. The Lord was alone in the beginning. Nothing existed at all. He glanced and created the worlds. Aitreya Upanishad 1:1. So they open with this. Okay. Yo brahmanam viridhati purvam yo vai vedams cha prahinoti tasmai. He first created Brahma and gave the Vedas to him. Svetasvatara Upanishad 6:8. So, yes, he gave to him. That means they were there before Brahma. So we're saying Brahma's creating, but that doesn't mean that the Vedas aren't eternal. Brahma may be temporary, right? But the Vedas are eternal. Surya chandramasau data yata purvam akalpayat. The Creator made the sun and moon as he did previously. Rig Veda 10:193. Okay, so this is at the end. The following are some smritis that describe this. Just as a huge banyan tree is situated in a small seed, the whole universe is situated in you at the time of destruction. Vishnu Purana 1:13:66. The Supreme Lord is Narayana. From him was born Brahma. Varaha Purana. The Lord transmitted the Vedas to Brahma. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:1:1. The main point is this. After the great destruction, the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, contemplating the universe as it existed previously, and deciding to expand himself into separates from himself all the enjoyers and enjoyed objects which had merged into him in subtle form, and creates the universe made of elements, starting with Mahat Tattva, and also creates Brahma as previously. He manifests the Vedas also as they previously existed. He teaches the Vedas to Brahma mentally and engages him in creating the universe with forms like devatas as previously. He also remains within the universe as the inner controller. Brahma, being given powers of omniscience by the mercy of the Lord, after contemplating the forms of the beings through the words of the Vedas, creates them as replicas of previous beings like devatas, humans, etc. Because the Vedas containing words like Indra express eternal archetypes such as Indra, the Vedas remain perfect. The relationship of word to the object is eternal. Thus the objection that the Vedas express temporary objects is countered. And thus the devatas having bodies are capable of worship, since they are qualified to worship Brahman. There is no contradiction in devatas meditating on the Lord, who is the size of the thumb, since they conceive the Lord's size according to the size of their thumbs. Right? So depending how big your thumb is, then that's how big he's going to be. Right? So it's a convenience for us that he's unlimited, but that size is there for us to meditate. Right? So then the idea is that they're saying, no, the demigods are temporary, so therefore then they can't have bodies because the Veda is eternal. So then, but then on the other side, then they're saying that the Veda can't be eternal. It's also going. So this way then, if that's there, then they have bodies based on the Veda, it's temporary, the Veda's temporary, so it all works out for them there. So in either way, it's either the demigods have no actual gross forms, or the Veda's not eternal. One or the other of these are, you know, makes it work for their, conditioning. But the point is no, the Veda's eternal, everything's based on the Veda, therefore then the forms of the demigods are eternal because it's based on the Veda, though the specific jiva that's there, they have a temporary time taking that position of that particular demigod. Right? Does that make sense? Just like pots. Pots are always there, right? We dig them up, you know, and that, and every creation, every civilization that there is, everybody's got pots, right? And so, and we always call them pots. Why? Because there's the eternal principle of pot, right? So potness is there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
It was mentioned here that everything merges into the world.
Yes.
Into the world.
Yes.
However, we know that the Maya, she stays away from him when he glances at her.
Yes.
So,
well, because in here is that she doesn't have to merge into him because the Mahatattva remains. So Pradhan remains because this is the area where Pradhan is manifest. Means in other aspects of the creation, it's not manifest. It's not that your Mahamaya aspect is not there in Yogamaya. It's just that aspect's not manifest. So all that's perceived is the spiritual energy. But within this one quarter, then that perception of the material energy is seen. Does that make sense? So even though it's all Brahman, but this is what you are seeing here, perceiving here. So even it goes back, it's still going to be designated as this is the area in which the conditioned jivas will stay. Because Mahakalapura is there, Lord Shiva and his wife are there, you know, all those kind of things are going on.
So this is not created and destroyed, it's always there.
Yes, but the aspect is the universes, and then the living entities being within the universes to enjoy themselves, and the objects of enjoyment, that's created and destroyed.
So this is happening this time, but additionally,
yes.
Before the universes.
Yes, yes. But Lord Shiva, his wife, his associates, and your residents of Mahakalapura who think they're absorbed in Brahman and have become one with Brahman, they are all always there. Does that make sense? So it's just the universes, the Brahmanandas, those are manifest and go back. So that means for them to manifest, then that Pradhan being glanced on goes into Avyakta, then by the Lord entering it, then it can go into Mahatattva. So then you have all the different aspects of the living entities with the desire to enjoy, the false ego that is there, right? Then all the 24 elements that have the potential to become all of those aspects of the primary creation. Then he enters that as Garbhodaksha Vishnu. Then from his navel comes Brahma. Then Brahma, by the blessings of the Lord through meditation, then is able to then create that gross manifestation of the 14 worlds in which all the various forms and objects are there for the living entities to take up according to their previous karma. Does that make sense? So that'll be going on. So that winds up back into the Lord. The other aspects, then they just go on. So it's all part of the eternal. So the Mahatattva is eternal, but the manifestations within the Mahatattva, that comes and goes. Like that. Does that make sense? Because technically, Sadashiva and his wife aren't material. They're just other aspects, transformation of him and his energy. So they're always there. Does that make sense?
Another question is, all this makes perfect sense if there's one language. But if there are many languages, then
Because Brahma doesn't create, let's say, food from French. Right? So everything that's there is created from Sanskrit. Because that's from the Vedic language. So the Vedic language is Vedic Sanskrit. So from that language it's all created. But that's also confirmed in Smriti, where then the sages and that, they'll talk in classical Sanskrit. In other words, the Veda is its own language. And then classical Sanskrit is what you speak that's based on that knowledge of the Vedic language. Like that. And then from there, the derivatives all come down, all the Prakrits come. Like that. So then, you know, your modern languages are Prakrits of Prakrits of Prakrits. They just keep going. Right.
So is the classical, Smriti, and the Vedic Sanskrit is the Shruti?
Shruti, yes. Yes. So that's why they're two different ones, is that even the language is different.
Yeah.
But they're compatible languages. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd just be like, let's say in the language you have kind of like the high language, you know, that's like considered the very literary, very technical, and then you have the more, you know, colloquial language. No, it still is you know, very proper, you know, like that. So that's the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
That's why sometimes things that are mentioned from the Vedic Sanskrit, if you try to analyze it from the grammatical laws of the classical Sanskrit, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like that. So they're in other words, all the grammar of the classical Sanskrit is in the Vedic Sanskrit. But there's more. Like that. Is that So it's not that you have classical Sanskrit and then you study as a branch the Vedic Sanskrit. No, Vedic Sanskrit is the main and classical is a branch of that. Does that make sense? That's why scholars many times have problems with it, because they just think it's just a little side thing. You know, it's just like, okay, I studied, how you say German. Right, you know, like that, standard German. So, therefore, naturally, High German will be very easy for me. But no, it's not. If you know High German, German's easy for you. Like that. You know. Is that what I'm saying? Yes. What's the purpose of having two different Sanskrits?
Yeah, one Sanskrit
it just has to be one. Just one. So then. So then, why in Maharashtra do you speak Hindi? Acha. Bombay Hindi is the national language. because you're going to use the Vedic in rituals, and so then it has its very specific intonations and everything like that. Plus, by the intonations, that adds to the grammar, and so then you know what it's saying by just the sound vibration. So you can actually say more technical things in a simpler way because of the intonations. So word-wise, you can use less words, but it's more technical because of the intonations. Okay. But it's specifically for the rituals. That's why not everybody can chant them. That's the restriction.
Because it lets...
Qualification, because unless you're trained in that. The other one, you just have heard it speaking, you can speak it, it's not a problem. You know, it's just like you grew up in a language, and so you can speak the language. You move on the street and everything, but it's not necessarily you're qualified to teach the language. You understand? So there must be training. So for the Vedic, then, that one, it's not spoken. So you can only learn it by training. You understand? So it's yeah.
Swaras is daily language.
Yes, you know. Yeah, it means if you have an attachment for that, but at the same time aren't going to put in the full effort, then you know, then you'll be born before they speak Mandarin or Cantonese, right. So then at least you get the intonations, right? You know, yeah. Like that. So the Cantonese has more intonations. I think it has 9, while the Mandarin only has 4. So that would be closer to the Veda. So maybe one's more like Sam Veda and the other one's more the other. Depending on what Veda they were attached to. Then. Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. The Supreme Lord's instructions to Brahma on his work of creation convey the same names and forms of the previous creation. Thus they manifest again and again. So this is also another aspect of what we mean by chewing the chew. Is that whatever is there now has already been here before. Right? So in other words, if you have a malecha, they're the same as before. Right? So, you know, they like to live in very dull, rainy places and eat curry. Right? You know, it's just standard. So that's Brahma makes them like that. So that's the whole point, is there's nothing new. The idea is, no, but it's new, we're different, we're unique, we're not Vedic, but we're not exactly, you know, modern, you know, we're in this new area, aren't we so fabulous, aren't we so great, because before as the modern, I'm a write-off, and then as a devotee, I'm not that serious, so hey, I can have this great social status by being in this new category that, you know, is just so different that neither can actually control it, and so then who controls it? It's me. I'm the center of this new, you know, how you say, new social order. Like that. We would say new world order, but I think that's already been taken. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, but here it's the same over and over. They manifest again and again. That's why the Bhagavatam says chewing the chew. Right? You know, it'd be like sitting there at the sugar cane place after they squeeze the sugar cane, and you're chewing on one of the ones that's already been squeezed. And then another one comes out. Oh, a new one. And then you take that and start chewing on that. You know, so that's the whole thing. Oh, it's new. You know. You say, yeah, oh, new shoes. Yeah, you put your feet in them. Yeah. Yes.
Sounds like we have a second
half of life. Yes. See, the thing is that one has to appreciate from Lord Chaitanya's movement because of the nature of the potency of Achinta Beda Beda Tattva. It has the aspects of all the sampradayas. So all aspects are contained. And so its potency and the blessings of Lord Chaitanya is much faster. So you could say it's the quickest, most energetic of the sampradayas. So naturally then what would take others hundreds of years to produce in apasampradayas, we can produce in a much shorter time. Like that, yeah. You know, it's just like in what do you call it, 500 years, then, you know, you've gotten, you know, so many. But now, because of the founder Acharya, it'll be speeded up even more. You know, so... Like that. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.38. Sukadev Goswami said to Maharaj Parikit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, after being seen in his transcendental form, instructing Brahmaji, the leader of the living entities, disappeared. 2.9.39. On the disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who is the object of transcendental enjoyment for the senses of devotees, Brahma, with folded hands, began to recreate the universe full with living entities as it was previously. Srila Prabhupada explains the ultimate purpose underlying creation. Therefore, the whole process of God consciousness is meant to rectify the conditional activities of the senses and to re-engage them in the direct service of the Lord, right? So that's the actual main point that was given. Is that, what do you call it? Hari, who is the object of transcendental enjoyment for the senses of devotees. Right? So the devotees, they engage their senses, but for the pleasure of the Lord, that becomes the uniqueness of it. Is that we're engaging the senses with the sense objects for ourselves. That's called sense gratification. But we're engaging the senses in a way that it'll please Krishna. That's called bhakti. Right? You arrange a party for the person that the party's for, right? Then that's one thing. You're arranging the party. You know, it's around that because you like parties and you need an excuse, so there's got to be someone you're arranging it for. You understand? That's the difference. Just like if you're arranging the birthday party because you like to arrange parties, you couldn't care less about the birthday guy. So therefore, you're doing all these amazing things so people will think, oh, you really care, but actually you really don't. You understand? That's the material. But when it's being done, that you're doing these activities, doing so many things, using the senses for the senses, right? Then, but it's for Krishna. Then that becomes bhakti. Lord Brahma, thus, so that's why the creation is created. You could say, but why is there all the sense gratification? It's so that we can use the senses in the Lord's service. That's what it's actually for. But people are coming here because they're not doing that. Just like, what's the prison for? It's actually for reformation of the criminal. They should come to the, you know, consciousness of a, you know, the standard citizen, so they can go back out into society and become part, integrate back into the regular society. But there are those who are maybe doing that in the reformatory system. But you'll see many are just comfortable just having their own system inside the prison. So they continue that criminal mentality and everything. They just create their own social system. But the actual point is that you're supposed to know, follow the system that's outside. Right? Does that make sense? You follow the system inside, you stay inside. You follow the system outside, you go outside. So in the same way, you follow the culture with the mentality that's recommended. Then you go back to the spiritual world. But you follow the culture here with the mentality here, you remain here. It's simple. Because you can say, the guy, he did his time, he'll go out anyway. But then how much time before he's back in? I think the percentage is very high. Because they didn't change the mentality. But if you change it, so what does that mean? The ones who went out and stayed out, either means they weren't caught, or they changed the mentality. But in the spiritual world, you have all those nice tridents and all the 10 directions, and they'll catch you. So that's not going to... Yes.
Just as a side point, I was contemplating on what you just said, is that in many ways we can see how prison culture influences modern society, because before only certain people had the tools and spoke a certain language, and it was everywhere in America, in Europe, USSR, in China, like that. But now it's everywhere with the same language, and everybody, most everybody has the tools. So the prison culture, it's like it's in the prisons, and we have the prison culture.
Yeah, because it's the criminal mentality. So as soon as, because before it was, there was at least the ideal that you're supposed to be a nice guy. You know, and that even though they were maybe not nice guys, and now and again they were caught out at it, that would just meant they weren't so clever. And then everybody else is, oh no, how terrible! You know what they mean is how terrible is, you know, he was caught. You know, like that. I hope they don't catch me. You know, but now it's kind of like they're, you know, adjusting with their criminality. So now everyone's comfortable with that. So yeah. So it just means that bad qualities are becoming more and more the standard. While the Vedic culture, then, it's the good qualities that are the standard. Bad may come up just because we're conditioned, but you're working to remove them. Nowadays, it's kind of like you're working to cultivate them. You know, it's just like, let's say, in the job, okay. Now, they could go forward at a slower pace to make money and all that, and keep everything in place. Or they can move forward, try to move forward quicker by firing, you know, so many people on the job. like that. Now, someone may complain, no, but they're here, they're loyal, they've been working for us for so long, what about their families and all that? Now, that will be seen as a bad quality in the corporate world because you're sentimental, you're this and that. That's not productive. It doesn't make money. Therefore, that hard-heartedness, that, you know, cutthroat, that aspect, then is cult, and that's seen as, now he's a good businessman. You know? So then that's the difficulty, is that these bad qualities, you know, you're supposed to be cool and not care about anybody and everything like that. And so, you know, or you know, it's more about your career and not about your family, and it's more about you and not about, you know, I think it was just, I saw advertised, I think it was last year, a movie, a romantic comedy called Me First. Right? You know, it's just, they're not supposed to be like that. You know, it's all supposed to end and it's all about the other person. But no, this is a, no, it's about me. And then adjusting with that. You know, so then, you know, before you didn't see stuff like that. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that it's just, it's all about, you know, what you need, be true to yourself and everything like that, means do whatever you feel like. When you say, do, be true to yourself, sounds like I'm giving this deep kind of philosophical thing, and everyone goes, oh yeah, you know, nods their head and takes that deep breath, and, you know. But it just means do what your mind wants. Something like that. Because unless there's training, being true to yourself, then it's about truth and about what you're supposed to do. But here what they mean is what you feel like. You know, don't do something because you feel you have to. Do it because you want to. So therefore, but the point is, it's not doing something that you're supposed to because you want to. It's doing what you want to. Right? It'll go from doing your duty because you want to, doing your duty, but even though you don't want to, but you're doing your duty because it's a higher principle. Then it comes down to doing what you want in, you know, within that kind of thing. Then it's just doing what you want. You know, so it just keeps coming down. And then once it gets into too much, you know, it turns into too much of a Mad Max kind of a scene, then at some point, then it'll either, you know, fall apart, or they'll have to restructure it again. So that's the whole difficulty, is that this concept of doing whatever you want then turns into anarchy. So within the non-humans, that's not a problem. Because they simply, the animals just do what they want. But what's provided to them of what they want to do is given by the mode, so they just do what they want, which is within the confines of that nature. So dogs always do what they want, and it's always as a dog. You know, you don't see them sitting on the side of the road with a cello, you know, playing some nice stuff like that, and, you know, with their case open and, you know, a few notes inside, and like that. And yeah. I don't think that a hat would fit very well on a dog's head either. You know, it'd have to be too small. The proportion would be really out, you know. Cat, maybe, but, you know, dog, no. You know. Yeah.
Can we say that the purpose of creation?
The purpose of creation.
Is well understood by people of the other creations.
It's well understood by peoples of other creations.
The questions. Can you speak a little bit?
Yes. No, it means you have to go home and work on this, you know. See, you hang a you have a picture on the wall, right? You go into the next room, face the wall, speak, you know, using the stomach muscles. When you hear that picture on the other side rattle, then you got it.
So the purpose of creation has been well understood by people of the other three yugas.
Of the other three yugas.
Means
you could say in, you'll have more proportion, a greater proportion of people who understand. But as you go, it'll be less and less. There's always, means, just like what we have now, your tribals, they've always been there. It's not that they're only there in Kali Yuga, they've always been there. Like, you know, it's the Nishadas, you know, it's like Nala is the king of the Nishadas, but that's always been there. So So that's not in this age. That was, you know, they're able to take their chariots and by mantra they can fly with their chariots and stuff like that. You don't hear of kings doing that here. So that has to go back. You hear of it in Treta Yuga. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so it goes way back. So, but there's Nishadas. Does that make sense? So that means there's always that element of the population who doesn't understand. And even of those who follow the Vedic culture, then they may or may not understand. So those who are Karmis, they understand some degree the Vedic culture and knowledge, but not so much. They don't know that the creation is actually for going back to Godhead. The Gyanis, then they have a little bit further understanding about how the universe doesn't actually have any benefit for the soul. But they don't understand the personality of Godhead. So actually only devotees understand. So it's just a matter, so in Satya Yuga, everyone's a Paramahamsa. They all understand the nature of the Lord and transcendence, but it's not necessarily they're all devotees. Like that. They'll all be transcendentalists, but they won't necessarily be devotees.
Start with the creation.
Yes.
But here, we are trying to defeat the argument by saying that, like, neglecting or avoiding this concept.
No, they'll have the creation. They'll have the creation, they just don't think that all this is eternal.
Then we'll go back to one.
Because if it's eternal, then that means the eternal principle is higher than the temporary. And if that's there, then their work for sense gratification is not actually a very high point. So that development of the soul to become happy isn't actually going to be that high. So the jnanis would be higher. So a tato brahma jigyasa would be higher than a tato karma jigyasa. Right? Or dharma jigyasa. You understand? So that then their... You know what I'm saying? All these other things are okay. Yes. Yeah. Just like the Maya bodies, they're avoiding. You know? They're avoiding. You know, scientists are avoiding. Everybody's avoiding. This material universe is thus created and annihilated by the will of the Lord. Is created to give the conditioned soul a chance to act, to return home back to Godhead. And servants like Brahmaji, Naradaji, Vyasaji, and their company become busy, down here, with the same purpose of the Lord, to reclaim the conditioned souls from the field of sense gratification and return them to the normal stage of engaging the senses in service of the Lord. Instead of doing so, i.e. converting the actions of the senses, the impersonalists begin to make the conditioned souls sense less. And so the Lord also sense less. Right? Because if they don't have senses, you know, definitely God shouldn't have senses. Right? Because we're supposed to be God, so we don't have senses, so he can't have senses. You know? Does that make sense? You're walking and he shows up in a Lamborghini, not happening. Right? You know, it's just... That's why they make no sense. You know. So do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah, no, it makes no sense at all. Because you say there's no senses. Yeah, that's it. That would really kind of spin their heads out. You know. This is improper treatment for the conditioned souls. The diseased condition of the senses may be treated by curing the defect, but not uprooting the senses altogether. So this idea of throwing out the baby with the bathwater is actually coming from the Mayavad. Like that. That's the thing. Is that anything, so I just throw everything out. That extreme kind of thing comes from there. Like that. When there is some disease in the eyes may be cured to see properly. Plucking out the eyes is no treatment. Similarly, the whole material disease is based on the process of sense gratification, and liberated from the disease condition is re-engagement of the senses to see the beauty of the Lord, hear his glories, and act on his account. Thus Brahmaji created the universal activities again. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.39. So does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is doing the devotional activities. That's the real thing. So maintaining the idea of sense gratification, it's about me, is not actually beneficial. So the more you adjust that, the better. Does that make sense? That's why when they come, some individuals, when they come to the Paramahamsa platform, they don't even follow the standards of social etiquettes and that of the world. It doesn't mean that they don't have good character. It just means they don't bother about all the dressing and all the economic status and all these different things like that. They don't worry about it at all. So they just, whatever they can find, like Gorky Shortness Babaji Maharaj, whatever, after they have, the cremation, there's always cloth and things like that that are used for these things. You know, and everybody will take bath, right, they wear their clothes there, they take bath with the clothes on, then they put on new clothes and leave. So that means they leave the old clothes. So that means the beggars and others, they can come and take these things. So then he would just take a piece of this cloth and wear that. So they don't care about it, because it's just about being absorbed in Krishna. Okay? So we see is that that's the natural state, goes towards that direction. Not worrying about social status, just worrying about this works for devotional service for me. I'm able to engage in devotional service properly. But then the other, then it's about me and how I fit into the modern social environment, so that I will feel, you know, I have an identity, I have a status, people won't look down on me. Like that. So that's quite mundane. So they're not seeing that, no, the world's meant for reformation. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like coming out of prison, wearing a prison outfit and saying, why can't I wear this? This is me. You know, why do I have to fit into society using what they dress? Why can't I just be true to myself? Like that, you know? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so that's the whole thing, is the senses are engaged. So in nonsense, so you're engaging them in, you know, what, proper sense. Like that, you know. So, yeah. So Brahma, he creates, so that opportunity is there. That means all opportunities you could use to be Krishna conscious. Like that. That's why they're there. We're just not used to it, so we start with the direct ones. We will say chanting japa is directly devotional service, even if we're not concentrating on the name, but we'll accept it as that. Going to the, you know, worshipping the deity, we'll accept that as directly devotional. But with time, we'll start to be able to see everything connected. So, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur adds as a side note, by this, it is understood that Brahma's bewilderment on seeing his daughter took place in the previous kalpa, not after hearing the instructions of the four verses of Bhagavatam. For the Lord has just said that in this kalpa, Brahma would not be bewildered. The bewilderment of Brahma when Krishna appeared on earth during this kalpa must be understood to be a pastime produced by the mercy of the Lord. Right? Since the teaching of the four verses took place on the first day of Brahma's life, according to Srimad Bhagavatam 2.8.28, the bewilderment would have to be in another Brahma's life. Mm-hmm. Sardarta Darshani 2.9.39. So then this principle, since Krishna gave this blessing, it can't happen that after that, then he ran after his daughter, because that wouldn't happen. At the same time, as one may say, then based on this, is then the bewilderment of Brahma in the Brahma Vimohan Leela in the 10th canto, then also couldn't have happened. But no, that was by special arrangement of Krishna. Like that. That was just for that interaction with him. Because otherwise, we see before that he's not illusioned, after that he's not illusioned, just at that time. So then he's pointing out here that this would have had to take in another Brahma's life. So in other words, this Brahma didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But that's not a bewilderment of his relationship with Krishna. He just doesn't know that there's, you know, millions of Brahmas. But we know from Bhagavatam.
And he's got this knowledge of Bhagavatam.
So hearing something from Bhagavatam means you fully realize it? You maybe understand it, but do you realize it? No, but why are you putting him in a different position? He's a jiva. How do jivas understand anything? They get creation for dummies and just go through, you know, make sure they keep in, you know, don't skip any pages or anything. Or maybe, you know, created all these people, forgot to create the planet first, and you know, then have to go back. What's it? Oh, here it is, and then they get the planet. You know what I'm saying, right? So the point is it's only by the Lord's grace that something's revealed. Then, by practice of that, contemplating that, then you understand that. In his sadhana, does he need to contemplate on other Brahmas? No. So then, where will be the practice? Even if he knows there's unlimited universes, it just doesn't come to mind that in each universe there's different Brahmas. So in this universe, when he goes to visit Krishna and Dwarka, then in this universe he's the Brahma. But what he's not catching in this point is Krishna's unlimited glories, that he's the Lord of all the Brahmanandas, not just this one. So then one is asked, which Brahma? He's thinking, this one, of course. But the point is Krishna's the Lord of all of them. It's the same Krishna. It's not that... See, in this universe, there's this Brahma. Another universe is another Brahma. But the Krishna in this universe is the same Krishna in the next universe. So therefore, he could then ask, which Brahma? And then Brahma wouldn't be aware of that. Is that okay? Okay. Yes?
This Brahma Vimohan Leela, we know that the Madhva Sampradaya, they're not big fans of this pastime.
No, they're not.
Well, how about this pastime of Brahma being bewildered by his daughter?
That I don't know, I haven't heard. But in any case, by this, then it was a previous kalpa, so then it doesn't matter. You know, so it's before he got that blessing from Krishna.
Yeah.
So once getting that, then it's not happening. Exactly. Yeah, because of their formality and all that, they don't accept that. We'll have no problem with it because it's a brudge pastime.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that aspect of so in other words, the pastime in Dwarka doesn't reduce Brahma's position. It just increases Krishna's.
Mm-hmm.
But the Brahma Vimohan, then it appears it reduces Brahma's, but actually it just increases Krishna's. Is that he's beyond, so it's only by his. So we don't have any problem with it. But for them, because he's the head of the Sampradaya, then they have a problem.
And you could argue that it increases Brahma's position too, that he's such an intimate associate.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course, you could. So there's no problem.
Yeah.
But somehow or another, I'm not sure if Madhvacharya himself then avoided that, or specifically the Tattvavadis like that. Because many times it comes later, do you know? That I know of, they don't have. Okay, then, oops. Okay. So Sutra 1331. Madhvadish vasam bhavad anadikaram jaiminihi. Madhu adishu in madhu vidya and other Vedic meditations. Asam bhavaka, because of impossibility. Anadikaram, qualification. Jaimini. Jaimini says that the Devadas cannot perform this madhu vidya because it is impossible to be both the object of worship and the worshipper. And it is meaningless to attain what is already attained. Right. So in other words, what, this Madhu Vidya has something to do with meditating on the demigods?
Yeah, it's like some kind of karmakanda.
Karmakanda meditation on the demigods. Okay, like a yoga meditation on Paramatma. They're doing it on the demigods.
Yeah.
Okay, so it must be their what do you call it? Manasapuja or something.
Yeah. So they say that human beings perform this Madhu Vidya, but the demigods themselves don't do it.
Don't do it, yeah.
No.
But then... Okay. Okay. Louder, please.
Speaking of meditating on the Paramatma, which is the Sacred Kama, that was speaking of, and then you began that Karma Vinyasa system, that only the humans can meditate, but not the demigods.
Meditate on this Madhavidya is meditating on the demigods, so if they're taking that through, therefore they're not meditating on Vishnu. But the point is they're not Vishnu, they are the demigods. So Indra wouldn't have to do Indra meditation to become attain Indra. He's already Indra. So what's, or you're just making a statement?
Yeah, I'm making a statement. To meditate on Vishnu.
Yes. Not on these, but the point is they're going to bring anything they can up to establish a point, like the Mayavadis do. See, the point is if everyone was that logical, then why do you need Vedanta Sutra? It would already be, everybody would read the Upanishad and come up with, you know, pure Vaishnava, you know, pure devotion as the conclusion. Right? Sutta Prakashika. This sutra states the opinion of Jaimini Muni, who claims that the devatas are not qualified to engage in Madhuvidya and other forms of Vedic meditation. Footnote 37. Madhuvidya, honey knowledge, is described in the Chandogya Upanishad 3.1.1. It uses the metaphor of a beehive, cross beam, and the process of bees making honey to describe the heavenly fruits of Vedic worship and sacrifice. It is considered inferior to direct worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so you're meditating on this, on how you're going to get the benefits. Right? It must be if you're getting the honey, so then how to get the benefits of that by performing the yajnas and everything. So it may be something because, that's called mukanta. There's something in where the karmakanda rituals where there's a section called mukanta, which means they go through all the sections that they're going to perform. So it's like a checklist of everything that will be performed in the ritual, so that they know that it's all there, you know, so they haven't missed anything and everything like that. So there's always this this aspect of being able to, you know, what you're going to get, what you're going to see, because if you don't know what the goal is, how do you apply what you're doing and get what you want? So they have to have that aspect. So it's an old aspect, the goal-oriented. So it's not a new thing. Okay, why? The Shastra says, asampavat, because it is not possible for them to do so. The object of worship cannot also be the worshipper. Furthermore, the devas do not aspire to attain the results of Madhavidya, meditation, to become vasus or exalted devatas, because they already are vasus and devatas. The significance of this section can be understood in relation to the previous Adhikarana, where the question was whether men alone are qualified to worship Brahman. Srila Vyasadeva shows that even the devatas perform the ordinary Vedic duties. Therefore, ordinary human beings must make even greater endeavor. Right? So they're doing, they don't have to do the Madhuvrata, Madhuvidya, they do meditation upon the Supreme Lord. Sri Govinda Bhasya. Are the devatas qualified for methods of worship, vidya, of which they are the objects of worship? This should be considered. Asau va adityo deva madhu tasya yaur eva tirashchina vamsaha. The sun is honey for the devatas, and this and his heaven is the rafter. Chandogya Upanishad 3.1.1, right? Because where does the honey? Where do they make the nest? On the rafter, right? And then from that you get honey. Does that make sense?
Just clarification. The Vyasa is arguing that the devatas do perform Vedic worship. They also perform this mother.
Okay. Chandogya Upanishad 3.1.1. In this verse, the sun is considered to be honey for the devatas. Different rays of the sun are considered to be the honeycomb cells. The vasus, rudyas, adityas, maruts, and sadhyas, devatas, seeing the nectar, become satisfied through the medium of chief devatas. The sun becomes honey by possessing rasa in the form of cells represented by rays, and is produced by performing acts prescribed in the Rig Veda and other Vedas, represented by bees who make the honey. Other types of worship are described elsewhere involving meditation on devatas. In the next sutra, Jaimini's opinion is given. Madhvadishva sambhavad anadikaram jaiminihi. Jaimini says that devatas cannot perform this maruvidya because it is impossibly both the object of worship and the worshipper, and it is meaningless to attain what is already attained. Jaimini says that the devatas are not qualified for this meditation on honey. Why? Because it is impossible. One who is the object of worship cannot be the worshipper. One person cannot be both. Also, it would be meaningless for a vasu to attain results of madhavidya, which is becoming a vasu. But so we're saying in here that they do this worship.
That'll come up. That they do.
That'll come up in the next one. Yes.
This is just stating. There's no.
Okay, so there's no discussion. This is just stating Jaimini's position, like that. I think we'll see this more and more coming up. Positions will be discussed because all the six schools will be discussed, like that. So their positions will come up. So then, but the point is Krishna meditates on himself. And he says that they become satisfied by this understanding. So even if they meditate upon themselves and this whole process, they're happy knowing that, just like if the rich man meditates on how much money he has, he doesn't then become the rich man. It's not that he gets money, but he's satisfied knowing that he has the money. Right? Otherwise he may forget. He's so busy doing everything like that. Then he remembers, no, I'm the rich man. Right, you know, so it works. Bhagavatam verse reference. Say Jaimini, chief of the Karma Mimamsa philosophers, says that the demigods have no reason to meditate on Vedic sound because they have attained all there is to attain by such meditation. Right. So we see here again the impersonal aspect that if I'm not going to gain something from it, why should I do it? Right. So yeah, that same kind of thing. Yes.
Just for the sake of context, it's important to remember the argument that was made in the beginning of Vedanta Sutra when the Karma Mimamsa followers, their sanshaya was that the main purport or prominent aspect of the Vedas was worship and sacrifice. Mm. And then the counter argument in Tantra Samanvaya is actually about Brahman. Mm. So they're saying that really the Vedas are about performing sacrifice.
Okay.
And it's wrong to think that it's about Brahman. Brahman is meant for another category of beings, not for humans.
Okay, that's what they say about the sages. Those who get the Tapaloka, that's their business.
Yeah.
Okay. But then, how do you get the Tapaloka unless you do it as a human? Mm-hmm. Do they explain that?
Oh, worshiping Brahman, yeah. I'm not sure.
Like that. Or only devatas then can do that worship, and then they go, from there they go. Okay. Oh, so that's why it takes so long to... Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.25, Yamaraj says, because they are bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yajnavalkya and Jaimini and other compilers of the religious scriptures cannot know the secret, confidential religious system of the 12 Mahajanas. They cannot understand the transcendental value of performing devotional service or chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, because their minds are attached to the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas, especially the Yajurveda, Samaveda, and Rigveda. Their intelligence has become dull. Thus, they are busy collecting the ingredients for ritualistic ceremonies that yield only temporary benefits, such as elevation to Swargaloka for material happiness. They are not attracted to the Sankirtan movement. Instead, they are interested in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Footnote 38. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, why is it that the learned do not generally teach the best of all dharmas, which easily gives liberation, worshipping the Lord by chanting His name, rather they teach and perform Karma Yoga? Great persons like Jaimini do not know. How is it that writers of scripture... So that's the whole point. He's saying, why don't they teach that? Because they don't know. Right? Great persons like Jaimini, okay. How is it that writers of scripture do not know? The powerful and learned are bewildered by powerful Maya. What to speak of the fools being bewildered? Right? So these great scholars are bewildered by Maya without Krishna's grace. So in other words, they haven't received the dust from the lotus feet of the great, the Mahajanas. So because of that, they don't know. So that's the whole point, is knowing Krishna, it doesn't matter if you're so intelligent, that still won't make it that you can, how you say, know the Lord. That's the whole point. That's why then one approaches the devotees, the spiritual master, and the parampara, that way then you get that benefit of knowing. You have that connection. Their intelligence is without discrimination because of down here, absorption in the three Vedas, which produce flowers of exaggerated results, which are very sweet. Therefore, they become involved with great sacrifices, like darsha, paurnamasya, with great effort, with elaborate materials, mantras, and performance, right? Because the more elaborate it is, the better it must give a result. So we see this flavor both in karma and jnana. The more difficult it is, it must be better, right? So if the paper that the person wrote, you can't even understand it, it must be good, right? You know, that's like that. So it's just, you know, you should get yourself, you know, one of those full Oxford dictionaries and then find the most obscure words and then put your paper together, and if no one can understand it, you're already on top of the academic world. I remember one gentleman, really rich gentleman. I think I mentioned this before. It was something about how he worked. All these buses and trucks and everything you see, because when you buy a truck or a bus, it comes without a body. It's just the chassis. So they all take it to this place, Jamshedpur. They build the bodies for it. And so that means everything this side of India, you know, Bengal, Assam, Bihar, all these places, everything's made there. So we can imagine the guy is doing quite well. Right? And so then, he then was telling me about, he had this nice big library right out in his living room, right? And it was all the Aurobindo's works. And he was saying, he's such a great, you know, personality, because his readings, his writings, I read them. I can't understand anything he's saying. So he must be so elevated, right? So that was his measure, you know, how to tell how advanced you are, is that you couldn't understand what he was saying. You know, so, yeah, it's a problem. Yeah. So the more elaborate it is, we figure it must be better. If it's simpler, we figure it can't be that good. You know? It's like Rupa Goswami explains, it's so simple, it can't be good. You know, we have to go into something else, the more complicated, fancy words. Oh, now this is higher. You know, Prabhupada's teaching, it's all so simple. Therefore, we read from someone else. Oh, just see, they use fancy words. It must be higher. It's the same problem. Okay. You know, what was that word he used? Their intelligence is without discrimination. So we're not saying they're not intelligent. We're saying they're very intelligent. Just they lack discrimination, which unfortunately is the main definition of intelligence. Okay. The demigods, that's where we are? Did we lose something? Oh, we're on Bhagavatam verses. Okay. The demigod said, the three worlds are created by the five elements, namely ether, air, fire, water, and earth, which are controlled by various demigods, beginning from Lord Brahma. Being very much afraid that the time factor will end our existence, we offer presentations unto time by performing our work as time dictates. Right? So worshipping time means doing things according to the time allotted to them for doing. Does that make sense? Like if the Shastras say, You get up in the early morning and take your bath, and by doing that, then that's respecting time. That makes sense. You know, today's Ekadasi, you follow Ekadasi today, that's respecting time. Okay.
as well as Ashtaprahar?
Ashtaprahar, you could say in that way, then it's time, but that's going to be for those who are on that level. So the principles always have, you know, like there's a time for doing something. So that means when Krishna's with Mother Jashoda, certain things are done. When he's with the cowherd boys, other things are done. When he's with the gopis, different things are done. Right? And because those are different rasas. And so they have their element of compatibility and non-compatibility. Right? In other words, the cowherd girls can spend time with the elder gopis and perform services that are assisting the elder gopis doing their services, right? So, in other words, they can serve Krishna in that, but the manifestation of the conjugal rasa is directly opposed. Does that make sense? You know, so let's say the boy is sitting with the girl, okay, and then his close friend shows up. The girl's comfortable. But if the boy's with the girl, and then the boy's mother shows up, we got problems. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that only when they come in line there. But the cowherd boys aren't involved in that. So they can't do all those. But they can come and take prasad with Krishna, or go to the goshala with Krishna. That they can do. Right? And then the cowherd boys being with the elder gopis, it doesn't affect their expression of rasa other than to be a little bit more, less crazy. You know, you have to be a little more formal. You know, you're in the house, you have to behave yourself. You know, you can't steal something off of somebody's plate and toss it to someone else and do that at Mother Jashoda's table. No, you all sit there, what's on your plate, you eat that, talk nicely, sit nicely, like that. But when they're out in the field, then they can be more expressed. They can steal Madhu Mangal's lunch. They can, you know, chase around. They can do all kinds of stuff. You understand? So the different rasas that they have there. But now, Mother Jashoda doesn't go out when the cowherd boys are there. Otherwise, they can't do that. Because it's Mother Jashoda's house. Everybody's there. And then everybody fits in. But when you go out, so it's her rasa. When you go out with the cowherd boys, it's their rasa. So if gopis walk by, it's not going to be a problem for their rasa. Right? It's neutral. Right? Does that make sense? But the if Mother Jashoda shows up, now it's her scene again. So that means it's not the boy's scene anymore. Does that make sense? And then where the gopis are, then it has to be only Krishna and the gopis. So in that way, foretasting of rasa, yes, then by time. But it's not that time is controlling, Krishna's desire is controlling. So time is serving Krishna. Like here, we're controlled by time. We want something to last forever and it's over in 5 minutes. And we want it to, you know, be over, you know, yesterday, and it goes on and on and on. You understand? So we're controlled by time. But for Krishna, it's not. It's according to his desire.
Even here, if you follow time in proper way, you'll be successful.
Yes. Yes. But what I mean in relating to the Yastakaliya Leela, that's on Krishna's side. For us, we just follow the Dinacharya and Ritucharya. That's what we follow. But you'll see is the Dinacharya and Ritucharya is what Krishna does there. So that's why his day goes like that. It's a matter of who he does what with where. So he's following the Dinacharya, but this part is with Mother Jashoda, this part's with cowherd boys, this is like that. Does that make sense? And the Ritucharya, that also then has the flavors in the pastimes. Because when it's hot, then chamaras, cool drinks, all these different things, cool places, bathing the Jamuna, that's the thing to do. But when it's cold, then making fires, you know, wearing, bundling up, doing all those different kind of things, hot food, these are all the things to do. So it gives the variety. That's why it says Krishna has unlimited variety. Seems we've gone over time. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki. Jai Nitai Gaurabhinda.